Hello, I'm Matt Baume, and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. We're on a podcast search for the entertainment that changed the lives of queer people. On this week's episode, MTV reality shows. My guest this week is producer Xavier Deleau, who always knew that he needed, somehow, to make television shows that told the stories of black queer lives. That wasn't going to be easy, considering that he went to school for social work, but he was determined. By day, he helped people in crisis, and at night, he and his friends worked on their own creative projects. That all came to a head one day when he found out that he was about to be evicted and made a tough choice about which career path he wanted to follow. We'll have that conversation in a minute. First, a reminder to head over to mattbaume.com to subscribe to my newsletter and take a look at my YouTube channel for videos about film and TV history. Also, head over to my Patreon to support The Sewers of Paris and watch hours of bonus videos. I just posted one about the late 70s fiasco Supertrain, a show that nearly caused NBC to go bankrupt. Now, here's my conversation with Xavier. Well, this week I'm chatting with Xavier Deleau. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, let's start with, what is the entertainment that changed your life?
The moment, this might sound really trivial, but it's really when The Hills premiered.
Oh, okay.
Because of the fact that, you know, as queer people, sometimes we use television as a method of escapism. And mm-hmm. So, you know, reality TV back then, it was just like, it was super crunchy, right? And so then we finally have Laguna Beach, and there are all these people who were, yeah, they were white, and I was also, you know, a suburban black kid in California, so I kind of fake related. So when I saw, you know, like, oh, this could be done in a cinematic way, and it's petty drama, sign me up, like, this is great. And that's when I realized I want to work in television.
Okay, yeah, well, tell me about that. Like, where were you, and what did you see on screen that you were like, aha, this is it, this has captured my attention?
This might sound really weird, but I'm a Taurus, and so Taurians are attracted to, like, really pretty things. And so I remember sitting there watching it one day, and I was in college, and I went to college for something completely different, you know, to appease my parents. But I remember sitting there watching MTV, looking, I'm like, this is so dumb, but they are making this look so great. And why can't I be a part?
Can you describe for, like, folks who might not have seen the show, what was The Hills?
Oh, let me tell you. Okay, so The Hills was a spin-off of a MTV show called Laguna Beach, which was about, you know, privileged, spoiled kids in Orange County, California. And they were doing a whole bunch of, you know, nonsense and debauchery that, you know, high schoolers typically did when they have a lot of money. And so they all graduated high school in 2004, which is when I did. And there was a spinoff starring one of the cast members, Lauren Conrad. She ended up finding a random homegirl to move with her to Los Angeles to start a new life together. Even though it was weird because they made Los Angeles feel like 6 hours or like hours away when it really was like 40 minutes. So it's literally a growth of two friends and how they are navigating young adulthood, young womanhood, and love, and figuring out what they want to do in life, which was essentially where I was in life, not knowing what I wanted to do and trying to figure it out. And because my life was so chaotic, I could definitely like move away from all this and just focus on this inane stuff that they're arguing about. So I'm like, you know what? This, I can relate. And I want to make this type of entertainment something that feels good and it doesn't necessarily do too much.
You said that you could relate to life being chaotic. What was chaotic in your life at the time?
Oh, I was 18, moving away. I went to college on the East Coast. And so I had never lived that far away from home before, ever, you know. I also hadn't come out to my mother at the time. So, you know, and I came out to her right before I moved away in like literally 2 weeks.
Okay. Before. How did that go?
It's funny when I tell the story, but at the time it wasn't. So it was literally to the day 2 weeks before I left to get on a plane. And she had came into my room. And, you know, when you're young and you're on MySpace and you're talking to boys or whoever you're into that you really shouldn't be talking to, and you should be focusing on whatever else. And she came into my room randomly and she was like, you know, I hear you on your computer late at night and talking on the phone late at night, and you're always shutting the window and closing it, you know, as soon as I come in, like, what does that mean? And then she flat out asked me, and she says, you know what? The Lord brought it upon me to ask you, are you gay? And then I was like, well, that's funny. You would have thought the Lord would have brought you the answer. I thought that was funny. She did not. So the conversation wasn't as, it wasn't this knockdown, you know, like, I hate you, you know, I'm disowning you, and I thank God for that. But I, it was, did put a little strain on the relationship because of the fact that you're kind of a completely new person to me, and I don't get a chance to get to know you because you're moving away. And, you know, my mother definitely, and she still talks about this to this day, how she never really felt like she was able to be a part of it because I was trying to keep it away from her for so long. But, you know, nobody knows how to be young and gay. No one's ever written a book or, you know, or given a pamphlet to, so you're young and gay. How to deal with it?
Well, so you said that you had basically 2 weeks to kind of live in that arrangement. And then you were off to the furthest you'd been from home. You said you went to the East Coast for college. Is that right?
Yeah, I went to a small college in Connecticut, about 45 minutes right outside of New York City.
What was the plan there?
The plan, my lofty teenage dream was to, you know, go to school and write the great American television show, and really just be gay. But because, you know, I didn't really know what gay life was like, right? I was I was relatively sheltered. I mean, yeah, I did stuff. It was high school, sure, but, you know, I was in this place that was brand new. I was in New York City all the time, so I really wanted to, you know, get my feet wet in a new town. But I always knew that, you know, I was supposed to be working in entertainment at some point. That was my goal at the time, yeah.
What did you, like, envision as the Great American TV Show? Like, what did you want to make?
Oh, my gosh. I wanted to make, by my holy trio of, like, TV creators are, Christopher Lloyd, who was executive producer of Frasier and stuff, and then the creators of Friends, and also the creator of Living Single. And the reason why is because I wanted to create a TV show that was for Black audiences that didn't focus on us being, like, making Black the joke. And I wanted it to be us existing, because my whole idea, and still now, is that everybody gets a chance to be themselves on TV except for us, or as Black people, because we always have feel like we have something to prove. And I'm like, I wanted to just write a show that is just us being who we are, and we just happen to be Black. And yeah, that was my goal at the time. Still
is. Feel even more challenging, you know, coming to it as a queer person, to be like, oh yeah, and also, like, you know, there's this difficulty in portraying Black characters on television, and also the difficulty in portraying gay characters on television.
Yeah, I get it. You know, there's in any show that you would deem as progressive, right? Like, regardless of what race it comes from, or you want it to be inclusive, you want it to be you want to make sure you're saying something, you want to make sure you're saying the right thing, and you want to make sure that you're representing something or a community that's, you know, not necessarily being heard. And I get all that, but it's super hard to navigate when everybody is trying to put their own pressures on you to create something that has nothing to do with your experience. Like, you know, if I were to create a show like about I don't know, homeless queer youth, you know, up and coming story, the only thing I can, like, talk about that would be my experiences, like, being a social worker. But other than that, that wouldn't be my experience, and I wouldn't be true to, like, writing that experience, you know? I think a lot of times people are looking for representation so hard that they kind of just don't get a chance to celebrate what's in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I always want to try to avoid in creating content is, you know, make it good. And if, and you know, it's Black and gay. So as long as it's good, that's all that matters.
You said that part of the plan was going to the small school in Connecticut and just spending some time being gay. How did that go in that environment?
Ooh, honey, let me tell you. it shaped me who I, it shaped me. And I think in all creatives, right? Whether you're a writer, journalist, director, whatever, you got to live a little in order to make art. Mm-hmm. And being young and gay in a new town, a new part of the country allowed me to do that. You know, a lot of times living in California or living on the West Coast in general, there's only three states that you really get to like kind of go and venture off through, you know. And in California, a lot of people don't necessarily leave it because, I mean, why would you? But I got to see so many different other things and understand so many different other cultures. And even, you know, there's not a lot of Black gay people in where I grew up. And so understanding Black queerness was super important and integral to who I am now, especially in the content that I create. And also it made me just a better person. You know, a lot of times people can't see past their noses because they always think that how they were raised was the proper way. And that's not necessarily the case either. So learning a different people and having, you know, crazy college nights and club nights and, you know, doing things that you wouldn't necessarily tell your mother about being young. I think that's all healthy and shaped me who I am, you know.
Do you have, are there moments that stick with you as helping you understand like your own Black queerness when you were in college?
Kind of. So at the school, I'll say this, I think I was the only openly gay Black person at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lot of pressure. So I kind of developed this idea of what I thought gay was supposed to be, right? Because of what I saw on television. And so I didn't necessarily have, there were a bunch of moments where it was like, I guess I had to be the only, I don't know if many people could relate, but just being the only one in any type of situation makes you either super powerful or super scared or both at the same time. And I remember being the first day on campus, I remember like looking around, and I always have this joke about people from California are just odd, especially Black folks. But I remember standing there on campus, noticing that I am, you know, I am visibly like feeling out of place because I am wearing, you know, bright colors. Pink is my favorite color, but I wasn't necessarily like, I was gay, you know what I mean? I was gay on campus. And I remember like people were staring at me, but then like also smiling at the same time. So I just kind of like, I didn't know what I was going to get myself into, but I knew that because I was there and the smiles and stuff I was getting were from my own people that looked like me. I was kind of like, okay, I might be able to get through this.
Did you have a moment where you felt like, this is it, I found my group or I found the place where I belong?
I don't know if I've ever thought that, ever. I grew up as an only child, so I've always been kind of like a floater in a group. So like I have different friend groups and different things. So it's like I kind of felt like I belonged everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like once I got to the East Coast, once I got to New York, that's when things kind of like clicked. And I feel like this is who I am and this is where I'm supposed to be. There's something about like a locale that just kind of just, you know, kicks up a something in you that kind of just makes you feel as though this is what I'm supposed to be right here at this moment, at this time doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Did you have a chance to make television and experiment with that?
Yeah, a couple times. So when after, and I, mind you, I did not do anything in TV professionally until like later, or entertainment, because I went to school for social work. Mm-hmm. So, because I also felt like I needed to help people. And I think comedy still does that too. But, you know, I ended up leaving, you know, graduated school, whatever. And I started working with my old college friends, and we wrote a TV pilot together, which did really well until somebody stole it and it became another show that got aired on television.
Oh, what happened with that?
Oh yeah, you've probably seen it too. And I can't say what it is publicly, but it was a show on VH1. So
okay, that sounds like a discouraging experience.
Yeah. But you know, it taught me to A, get a lawyer, and B, or a better one I should say, and B, have more fun. Because when we first wrote that, it almost felt like work, and we put all our eggs in one basket, and it was silly to do that. We were super young, and now that we have more guidance, or I have more guidance, and now I'm just having fun creating. You know, before it was like, I have to get out, I have to do this because I have to, you know, master and fulfill my dreams before I turn 30. And then after I turned 30 and I realized that everybody is just as fucked up as everybody else. So I realized I might as well just have fun in creating. And that's what's brought my success now more than anything, is having fun what I'm doing. And it shows, and people are more responsive to it.
Well, so let's talk about that. So you went to college, you got you studied social work while also working on television projects. What happened after college? Like, where did you wind up?
Okay. So, I was doing like script rewritings and stuff, because I was a YouTuber for a very long time.
Did you go back to California for that?
No. I recently moved back to California, during the pandemic, but when I was in college, I needed an outlet, because, you know, at the time my externship I was working with like Amnesty International. It was like a lot going on. So I needed just time and to do other stuff. And this is like 2008, and YouTube was a budding community. It wasn't anything like it is now, but back then it was a social media type of space, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember I was dating somebody and they had dumped me, and they kind of ghosted me or whatever. And then a few months later, they showed up on Facebook, and at the time they had YouTube and Facebook integration, and he was making funny videos, and I was like, well, I'm funnier than he is. So I was like, well, let me see how I can make videos or whatever. And for whatever reason, I sent him a message, and he was so sorry about dumping me, and then he taught me how to make edit videos, and things kind of went on from there. That's how I was able to do script rewrites for people. And then I ended up working with Patrick Ian Polk for marketing his movie, The Skinny.
And, okay. Yeah. Are you doing that from like in college or like?
I had graduated college, and I was working in New York City as a social worker, and I was doing all this on the side.
Okay. Yeah. So you had like a passion project that you wanted to pursue, or passion work that you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. While you're also, you know, I imagine like in your day job, like it's helping a lot of people.
Yeah, I worked with people who lived with dual diagnoses. So people who lived with substance use issues, and also who were formerly homeless, and people who may or may not lived with a mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot, you know, to bring home every day, you know, and yep. having an outlet. Social media, making videos, making people laugh, you know, that was a de-stressor. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, New York City is expensive, and you need another side hustle to make money. Uh-huh. So, you know, social work doesn't pay. So, you know, I had to keep food on the table and a roof over my head. And so that's also was a motivator.
Tell me about the work that you're doing, both like in your day job and your side hustle and all around. Like, what are some of the things that you did that you're particularly proud of?
So I was working to help house people who were formerly homeless, like I said, who live with dual diagnoses. And at the time, it was really difficult to get housing for that population.
Yeah.
Because there was budget cuts and all that stuff. And also it's just times, you know, the world is on fire and it's been for a long time. And so it's just really difficult, you know, to get people to may or may not have lived on the train for 10 years and get them housed. You know, that takes a lot more work than what people may think. And so, but at the same time, I had begun podcasting too, and that became really, that was doing really well. And there was a moment where two things happened. I was at work and I was at a training, and I got a couple of emails that like three of my clients had got placed in housing, which was great. I was like, ooh, I did my work, and that was amazing. And then later that same day, I got an email asking me to be a TEDx speaker. So it was kind of like a two things happened that was great. I'm doing amazing in my professional life, and then this amazing opportunity happened, you know, for you know, my side hustle. So it, you know, it was that day I was like, that is go off me.
Yeah, that's and when was that?
That was the end of, it was September 2014, because I did the talk in 2015.
Okay. And did you find yourself like moving more in a direction of making the content that you're talking about before, like, you know, content about Black people living their lives and being themselves?
Yeah. Because after I had stopped YouTubing for a while and I just moved on to podcasting, you know, I'm a fan, I watch your videos, and, you know, it's hard. So that and social work took a lot of time, you know? And you know, being on the train, it was a lot. So eventually podcasting took over the space or the main medium that I, you know, wanted to tackle. And most of my work kind of influenced all of that stuff, like the comedy, like having work stories, trying to make fun or make light of, you know, everybody has horrible days at work, you know, and trying to, and everybody has, you know, who's Black has had moments where they're the Black person or the only Black person at work, you know, and trying to make light of that and make people feel more comfortable and maybe provide tips through, you know, through the jokes or whatever to, you know, make people feel more comfortable, feel more at home, as well as entertained, which again lends itself to a whole bunch of other projects. Because what ended up happening was we realized, me and my business partner, is that we didn't have to wait for TV to come to us. We could just produce our own stuff.
How did that take shape? Like, what did you make? And I imagine there are a lot of hurdles to get over. So how'd you do it?
Oh, let me tell you. So a couple things happened. So now I have a podcast called Jaden XD. And so it's with my best friend, Jade. And we've been podcasting since 2014. And we, when the pandemic happened, we were making some money because we had a couple of ad deals or whatever. And that was great. But when the pandemic happened, things shifted. And I was still working a full-time job at the time. And, you know, we realized that we really need to pivot. It's either now or never. And so we had this idea of doing video content on Patreon, doing TV reviews and all that good stuff, because everybody was at home. And so we might as well just capitalize off people being at home. So we did a whole bunch of at-home content. I mean, and we still do, clearly. But, you know, and because of all that, we were able to produce the Jaden XD Variety Show, which was a very, 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 very short variety show accompanied with a live portion that did really well. And it's also provided us to do our family game nights that we do now, that are a produced game show, you know, that we do monthly.
Okay. Yeah. So like, tell me about like what goes into producing something like that. Cause I'm sure like, it looks like something real fun to watch, but behind the scenes, I'm sure you're doing a ton of work.
Oh yeah. And you know, God bless the people who work in TV. Because we're making TV on our own. Like, for example, the Jaden XD Variety Show, yes, we filmed it in March, but we premiered it virtually in September. And how that went was we had to find a space to premiere it because we wanted to have like a host and do a Q&A and things, all virtual. But as little as many people could be there as possible, right? So we had to get, everything was done from a little desktop using gamer techniques that we learned through YouTube to make it all possible. Even when we were shooting the stuff, a lot of it had to do with logistics, right? Because there was one thing to film during a pandemic and then there was also trying to find like people who we really trusted to work with us. And we ended up finding a friend of ours who lives in Sweden to edit everything. And so that was a task. I never had to ship anything to Sweden before, but having to ship a hard drive to Sweden was difficult. Even our family game night, those are all virtual. So we have people send us their files. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my partner, my boyfriend, who's also our creative director and stuff, he... you know, he's in there editing now. So doing, you know, like, what is it, like 36 videos of and putting it all together to make it look like a cohesive game show that you would see on TV, but, you know, done for $200. So.
Right, right. Mm. Yeah. So tell me about the feedback that you've gotten on it.
So far, so great. Even when we have done, I did something... I worked with Movember not too long ago, and we produced this other thing called Black Gay 30. And that was also received very well. I think people really love this idea of video content now that we're all home. People are also appreciative of the time and effort that, you know, we're taking. I've learned that working on the internet, people are more or less invested than you. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily on the product all the time. So far, all of the response has been great. And, you know, when's the next one? That's always the best, you know, sign of, you know, like, oh, I did a good job. Mm-hmm. So when they're asking for more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a great, like, if people are like, I want more of this, you know, you've really hit something.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, girl, if that's what you want, I'll be back next month. So, of course.
Do you have like dream project, like a thing, like if you could expand, you had unlimited budget or time or money or whatever, like what would you want to make next?
Oh boy, there's two things. So when I was working with Movember, we in the Rooted and Rising Collective, I had shot two episodes of what's called Black Gay 30, and it's a docuseries about being Black and queer and turning 30. Mm-hmm. Because statistically, not too many of us make it to 30. And number two, people in general freak out about turning 30, and I don't know why. And I do know why sociologically, but I want to hear it from others. And also through that, I wanted to know, are they doing any like mental health, wellness type of thing, self-help or self-care, excuse me, to just make it through or cope? Because a lot of times people have these like anxiety crushing like moments of, I'm turning 30, I don't know what to do with my life, I am a young child, you know, with bills. Like it doesn't have to be that way. And so I would love to expand that. Go across the country filming it. I also want the Jaden XD TV show, which would be a scripted series of how me and my business partner met and how we became Jaden XD, right? The show.
It really seems like the stuff that you're working on now is building on and the what you were talking about earlier, like when you were in high school and still kind of figuring things out, like. It sounds like you're able to make that stuff that you wanted back then, of where it's a reflection of your life. It's not exactly the hills, but you know, in as much as the stuff that we put on social media is reality. It's sort of like you're making your own personal reality show.
Yeah, listen, my AP English teacher said it's always about the story. Mm-hmm. So I have always learned that whatever I do, I am crafting my story. Beyonce does it all the time. We should all learn from Beyonce. You craft the story. You craft the story. Everything that Beyonce has done, you kind of like carry on this journey. She brings where she has been into the future as well. And I kind of do the same thing, picking off of my dream of moving to New York City as a little boy and working in television. Mm-hmm. You know, and not, I don't necessarily technically work on linear TV, but you know, internet is just as viable as television. So I, and I don't have to, never mind. But the point is, I have taken what I've learned in this little spark that I've had since I was a little kid. And it definitely has engendered and inspired me in creating and what I do now.
Yeah, and tell me about it's Rooted in Rising, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the Movember work that you're doing.
Yeah, so it's a social impact accelerator for Black mm-hmm. men, and it was a 3-month. It was 3-month program, and chosen by Movember. I forget how many of us. It was 10 of us, I believe. And you know, they taught us a whole bunch of techniques and tools to create profitable businesses and making sure our content is impactful. Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, us as Black men, you know, we're dying too young, you know, and there needs to be some sort of content that, you know, especially from content creators, and it doesn't have to be all the time, but there has to be some sort of level of responsibility, you know, that we take into when we're representing our own communities, right? Like, even if I, you know, when I wanted, you know, married at the intersection of Black Gay 30, I wanted, and that's what I produced for them for Rooted and Rising. I wanted to make sure that, you know, not only are Black people getting help and figuring out that it's okay to be 30 and like having anxiety is okay, but also, you know, being queer. You know, a lot of times we're left out of the conversation when it comes to health or wellness. Or if we are talked about, it's always HIV and AIDS and nothing ever else that, you know, because we're not capable of other stuff. You know what I mean? So, you know, Movember and Rooted in the Rising definitely provided a space for us to challenge those ideals and make it so, you know, that it's okay to talk about this stuff and it's okay to feel this way. And I'm super thankful for them too, you know?
How does it feel to have, like, I imagine you had a lot of interaction with the other folks who were part of the program. So to have those colleagues there, people are going through something similar with similar dreams. How did that feel?
It was great. It was a challenge because of the fact that it was all virtual. Mm-hmm. When we met each week, you know, comparing ideas. I mean, you know, it was great seeing them, but you know, Zoom was definitely kind of like the other part of our group. But it was amazing also because of the fact that I had just moved here to LA, and mm-hmm. I mean, I know people, but not in a complete working capacity. And it was almost like being in a writer's room, even though we're working on our own projects. But it was great to just connect and be with like other Black male men who are creators, and also understanding that I'm not alone. We all too struggle with advertising in the net 60 and 90. We all struggle with, you know, the will to create, which is, you know, some days you don't want to film a video, you don't want to do a TikTok, you know. It was nice to feel that I wasn't alone.
Yeah, so tell me about what got you from New York to LA.
I haven't crafted a funny story about this yet. It's really traumatic. You know, me and my partner, we're sitting in the apartment. We're having, you know, I don't know, whatever, dalgona coffee, whatever I learned from TikTok, because it's the middle of the pandemic. And My landlord comes, and of course I have a shoddy landlord because it's New York City. Mm-hmm. And he tells me, hey, so I sold the building and they don't want you here anymore. The people who bought it don't want you here anymore. So you have about 30 days to leave.
And wow. Like, that's really terrifying.
Oh yeah. Soup's traumatic, right? And now granted, that was the weekend of July of Independence Day, July 4th. And I had at this time quit my job and I started doing all of JadenXD full time in April. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, great. So trying to find an apartment in New York City is like finding a needle in a haystack. Mm-hmm. Especially, and then during the pandemic, I didn't know what to do. I was walking around with my head cut off. It was a lot. And, you know, California, because I'm from here, I've always said I needed to move back to California. I just didn't know how or when. Mm-hmm. And so something in my spirit told me to apply for 3 apartments in California. One near my mother, who lives in Northern California, and 2 in Southern California. And the as soon as I applied for the apartment that I currently live in, like, I was approved within like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Whereas I had, by the time I had signed my lease for this apartment, an apartment in New York City had finally gotten back to me. So I was like, this is a sign for me to move.
Yeah.
So I decided to move in, and thankfully it's all worked out. It's been super easy, and I got to be in this program, and I got to be here talking to you. So
have you found that being in LA, like, has that changed the way you think of yourself, like, in the gay community? Like, do you just think of yourself as having, I imagine you have a different crowd now, or at least somewhat different people. Yeah. And has it changed your work?
Yes and yes. I, you know, most of my comedy is also based on observation, and social commentary is based on observation. And LA is a very, very, it's a great place to people watch. Mm-hmm. Because people take themselves way too seriously. And I kind of, and because of that, that has allowed me to figure out what people, because LA is also a big influencer kind of culture. So it's also allowed me to analyze and figure out what they like, and also tailor content or tailor my jokes to how they talk or whatever. Mm-hmm. And as far as socially, I talk about this all the time with my friends. New York is a place where you can just kind of just walk randomly into a bar and there's friends there. Or, you know, it's easy to be like, hey, you want to get a drink after work, because you two work, you know, on West 50th and 8th. LA is very different. You have to like plan and orchestrate things, and people in LA are very flaky. Mm-hmm. And I understand why, because it's traffic. Traffic is horrible. I wouldn't leave my house either. But it makes it a little bit more challenging to find friends or to develop any type of relationship, a working relationship or otherwise. And also, these times have also made it difficult because people have different ideals of what's safe and what's not. Mm. And so I always tell people, you know, I use my voice for a living, so I can't necessarily compromise it. You know, maybe you can, but I cannot. And so that's also made it a challenge as far as, you know, how often I go out, or, you know, where I'm invited to. And, you know, I'm still, it's almost 2 years and I'm still trying to figure things out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I lived in New York for 15 years. And so I consider that home. And, you know, I'm still trying to navigate Los Angeles. And I'm thankful that this program happened, because it's like, okay, well, at least there's, if anything happened, I know that there's like somebody in the industry I could like go to, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, as far as now, it's a lot of like a, it's almost like dating. Golly. You know, like, and also trying to make friends when you're when you're an adult is super weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's a challenge.
And what a like particularly challenging time to move to a new city. Like it's hard under the best of circumstances. And then at a time when nobody can go out.
Yeah. There, and that was the thing, you know, people like, oh, we should go here. I'm like, well, when and where and how? Like, I guess we go to the park and stand 6 feet apart, but it's also Los Angeles and it's 80 degrees every day. So I don't know if I'm trying to do all that, you know? And of course, people are Zoomed out, you know, there's a Zoom call for this, a Zoom call for that, Zoom party, Zoom here. You know, it's rough. And also, I never realized how much adult friendships are based through working environments. Like, and I make this joke about say no to coworkers because, you know, they're not your friends. But it's also how else do you meet friends, you know, as an adult? You know, like, how else do you get put onto new restaurants? You know, it's not like I'm trying to like learn that from a Tinder date or anything. So I that's been the challenge. But, you know, thankfully, now that things are opening up a lot more, I'm able to, you know, meet a couple new friends here and there. But even still, it's like, put a mask on. So.
With the, you know, being out of New York and in Los Angeles now, do you feel like that's changed the way that you do the work that you do now, or your plans for how you're going to do your work going forward, or like next projects to embark on?
Yeah. So, you know, me and my business partner, Jade, we had to pivot because, well, even during the pandemic, we were still doing like things from each other's houses, but like our respective houses, but she still lived in Brooklyn, you know what I mean? And so did I. Now, because of the fact that we live 2,400 miles away, that we have to ensure that how we do things virtually looks appeasing for everybody. And it's not like a Zoom call. And also how it's also made us better at time management, because we both suck at time management. But because of the fact that we have to, there's a 3-hour difference between us, and when we need to film things in person, it requires a lot more scheduling, you know, flights and stuff like that. And so it allows us to be a little bit more meticulous and more thoughtful in what we put out. Which has been kind of better for us.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how like the necessity of working with the limitations that we just are part of our lives now, it really does force you to be creative.
Yeah. Like I said, I was Zoomed out, and I hate the way Zoom calls look now. So we had to develop a system where we have like professional camera, but you know, my business partner isn't the most tech savvy. So we had to like develop this system so that she could do it. And it looks great, you know, as a finished product.
Yeah.
Where it's really just us using our iPhones recording. So nobody needs to know that except for you now. But
yeah. Well, so like looking back at where you were when you came out to your mother, you went away to college, you know, struck out on your own for the first time. What do you think that young version of you would think about the work that you're doing now?
Lil XD was judgy back then too. no, he would be proud. He would be very proud. He'd also be very curious as to what's next. Because of the fact that I know that for myself, that I, you know, when things are going good, I like to ride the wave, and maybe I like to ride the wave a little longer than I need to. And so, you know, I'm sure, you know, as Lil XD was very a precocious child, he probably would ask, you know, like, you know, what's next? What are you going to do next? And that's something I've been toying with a lot, even though I think I've started. Doing it. I'm going to, you know, try to be a gamer for real now. You know, introduce another sect to our business, Jade NXT Gaming, and, as well as filming some other projects too. But
what do you want to play?
Oh, you know, I'm a simmer. I'm a simmer. I've also recently have been playing, my boyfriend has been making me play WE2K22 as well as NBA 2K. But I'm open to everything. I played Life is Strange. That story was wild. You know, I'm open to things. So, you know, if you have suggestions, let me know.
Sure. Well, I think that's a popular choice. Like when you're talking about like The Sims and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Sims 4. Okay. Only because I have this idea of like, I want to build my own utopian society. So, you know, shout out to God Complexes. And so, and the Simic community is pretty intense. On YouTube, like I'm watching Little Simsy now, like it's a pretty intense community, but it's also super fun.
Well, it sounds like building your own community and making utopia, making the world that you want to see. Like that seems like that's been a goal for you since, you know, like the time that you set out. That's something that was on your mind.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I never really thought about that, but I guess you're right. I've always had this sense of making my own space. And I guess The Sims is the start of it. Wow, never thought about that. Thank you.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with that and more of your projects. So where can folks find you online?
Oh, well, you could find me anywhere and everywhere at xavierdelau.com, xavierdelau.com, or you can find me everywhere at my podcast, and that's jadenxd.com, and that's jadenxd.com, and that's where everywhere I am on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram. So is the podcast is everywhere you can stalk your exes and all of that good stuff.
That sounds great. Well, Xavier, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks to Xavier for joining me, and thanks to you for listening. And thanks to everybody who makes The Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/mattbaum to support the show and get back rewards like stickers in the mail and exclusive bonus videos. Check out my YouTube for deep dives into pop culture history at youtube.com/mattbaum and my newsletter at mattbaum.com. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of comptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.